Brothers in Islam, I came here for informational purposes to tell you something, to give you some information about your rights here in America as citizens or legal residents, and also to remind you about your responsibilities and living here in these United States of America, because any time, and not just from a sociological perspective of being a citizen of the country, but from an Islamic perspective, anytime you have a right or there's hukuk, there's also responsibilities that go along with those rights that we're given. So we're just not given rights and not having, or void of having responsibilities with those rights to make sure that other people maintain their rights, or and to make sure protect our own rights. So it's called hukuk al-insan in the language of the Sharia to Islamia, hukuk al-insan. One issue I want to raise to your attention as a reminder, and to tell you or give you an example of the consequences of you not knowing your rights and exercising your rights, primarily deals with your engagement or interaction with law enforcement entities. And specifically, I'm talking about the FBI, the Federal Bureau of Investigations, the Customs Border Protection when we cross coming back into America, be it for flying back into the country or driving across from Windsor, Canada, the TSA, those people that we deal with going through the airports and when we have to go through the body scanners, and the ICE agents, Immigration Customs Enforcement agents. First of all, when you're inside the actual country, and many of you, I'm sure, have seen this even on TV, but it's called Miranda Rights, about you have the right to remain silent. Anything you may say could be held against you in a court of law. You have a right to an attorney. If you cannot afford an attorney, one will be provided for you. This is regarding criminal matters. Anytime federal law enforcement approaches you, you have the right not to talk with them. And if you do talk with them, we suggest that you talk with them through an attorney. And at our office at CARE, Michigan, we have a staff attorney, Mahamia Lina Masri. MashaAllah, she's been with us for 3 years now. She graduated from Indiana Law School, and she has Islamic education as well. She is our staff attorney. And you should call our office anytime an FBI agent comes to your home, or if they come to your place of business. This is our very strong suggestion for the brothers. And you should pass this information along to your wives as well and daughters. Now, I know the first reaction that I get from Muslims is, well, I have nothing to hide. I have nothing to hide. I haven't broken any law. So why shouldn't I invite the FBI into my home and answer any questions that they have for me? And besides, we're supposed to be hospitable and invite them in to offer them some chai. I've heard this from brothers. If I have nothing to hide, why should I talk to them? And if I don't talk to them, wouldn't I be getting myself in trouble? I have the answer to this question. First of all, when federal law enforcement comes to your home, they're not coming to your home to be your friend. The I and FBI is in there for a reason. Investigation. If they are coming to you, they are coming to you either to investigate you or waiting for you to say something to open up an investigation against you. This is the first thing. This is the first thing you should understand. The second thing you should understand is the FBI across the country has been trying to get brothers to act as informants inside the masajid. They want to know which Islamic organization or charity is coming to raise funds inside the masjid. What is the sheikh saying during the khutbah, muhadara? Who comes for Salat al-Fajr? They even ask this question because they believe that the real religious people, who could be more extremists, are those people who are Ashab al-Fajr, This is what they do, right? So, if you talk with them without an attorney, they could either ask you questions they have no business asking you, which could be illegal questions, so they shouldn't be asking you, or they could be asking you questions that you, if you answer one way one time and another way another time, you could get yourself in legal trouble. There's a federal law. It's called giving false information to a federal law enforcement agent. That can give you the 3 to 5 years in federal prison. So it just doesn't mean telling them a lie. It also means omission. That if you leave something out of your story and they claim that you did it intentionally, this is a federal crime. Now we know that it's the nature of the human being. Okay, well, the Quran uses a word to talk about the man as insan. And we know that insan, man, is also related to the word tensa, right? So the insan is the nature of the human being that if we don't make dhikr, or the dhakr, if the dhakr doesn't make dhikr, that we will forget. It's in our nature. We will naturally forget things. So if the FBI comes to you and says, oh, you went to Pakistan last year, who'd you meet? And you went there, and what city did you go to? Did you meet with any scholars? What books did you bring back? They ask you this question. They say, okay, well, thank you very much. We had some information about someone in the community. If we have any questions, we'll come back and ask you later. They come back and ask you 6 months later, and you give different dates. You say, I was in Islamabad on July the 12th, 2011. You told us last time you were there on June the 12th. And you said Karachi. You lied. Or you left out one of the cities you went to. So they say, you better cooperate. So you're in trouble now. We can charge you. But if you cooperate and you go spy on the sheikh, then we'll let you get out of your problem. Then if you don't do it, you're facing a criminal crime. And I know a brother right in Dearborn who was charged and convicted of giving false information to a law enforcement agent, where he went and talked with the FBI a number of times without an attorney, against advice. He went and talked to an attorney. So this is one reason why we advise brothers that you should have an attorney. The second reason goes to the illegal questioning and the invasion question. In the United States of America, according to the law, the most important law, the first law in America that was put in the Constitution is called the First Amendment. And the first part of the First Amendment is freedom of religion. Because many people who immigrated here from Europe, especially religious minorities, they were persecuted by the majority. So the people who wrote the Constitution of the United States put freedom of religion. And part of what used to take place in Europe is that certain people who were minorities were questioned about their beliefs. We're free to believe whatever we want to believe in America. And as far as ibadat, the rituals, everyone is free to worship as they please, as long as there's no social implications that affect other people in the society directly. In America, there's a religion legal called Wiccan, for instance. You know what Wiccan is? Ever heard of Wiccan? Brother Anderson heard of Wiccan. Wiccan is the witches and warlocks, like the witches, witches and the wizards. This is a legal religion in America. You can go, and they even have places where they meet. And, this is protected under the First Amendment. So it's none of the federal government's business. If you're coming back across the border, if you're flying in the airport from the ask you, and we have a lawsuit right now against the FBI and Customs Border Patrol. We filed it almost 3 months ago. We haven't had a court date set, but we sued them because people in Michigan, including one of our shuyukh, Sheikh Ali Suleiman Ali is one of the five people in our lawsuit. But they've done this with most of the mashayikh. And other brothers have come across, different ethnicities, Pakistani, Indian, Bengali, African-American, Nigerian, Yemeni, Bosnian, Lebanese. They ask questions, do you pray? How many times a day do you pray? Who's your sheikh? Do you pray Salat al-Fajr in the masjid? Do you pay zakat? Who do you pay zakat to? They've even asked some of the brothers how they feel about certain ayatul Qur'aniyah. They've even gotten down this specific. How do you feel about the ayah of the Qur'an? وَلَنْ تَرْضَ عَنَّكَ يَهُودُ وَلَنْ نَصَرَّ حَتَّى تَتَبِعَ مِلَّتَهُمْ. How do you feel about the ayah? What does that mean to you? They get this specific. Therefore, we tell brothers that you should speak to them with an attorney. But even without an attorney, even when you're coming across the border, back into the country, because when you come back across the border, this is a legal gray zone. So under American law, for so-called national security purposes, you don't have the right to an attorney when you re-enter the country. Like if you're driving across to Windsor, or if you're flying back into the country, you have to answer their questions, such as, where did you travel, what did you buy, bring you back to the country, how much money do you have on you, what was the purpose of your travel? You have to answer those questions. You have no right to an attorney there. But if they start asking you questions about faith and belief practices, they have no right to ask you that, and you can decline and say, excuse me, I feel uncomfortable. You know, to my understanding, you don't have the right to ask me if I pray or not, if I fast, if I pay zakat, who do I pay zakat to? I don't have to answer those questions. Because in essence, what these questions are doing is it's criminalizing religiosity. So basically, if you're a Muslim and you say, oh, I don't pray and I drink khamr, or you're the good Muslim, we'll leave you alone. We're not investigating you because you drink wine. Oh, you believe in having a bunch of girlfriends, you don't pray, so you're a good Muslim. And then you're a bad Muslim if you have a beard, you pray, you don't drink wine, you pay your zakah, you believe in every ayah of the Quran, whether the mushrikeen like it or not, that doesn't make you, you know, then they're looking at you that maybe you're not a good Muslim. But this is your legal right. You should understand your right. Also in the airports, we've had these complaints regarding the airports. In the airports, they can check and see what type of books you have if you're traveling. They don't have any right to question you about the contents within the books or how you believe about all the contents in the books. In the United States of America, you can go to a library. You can find books on Hitler, Karl Marx and Engels, the Communist Manifesto, Das Kapital. You can find books on witchcraft. There's nothing wrong with having Islamic books or books in other languages. You don't have to describe every single thing in that book or if you believe in every single thing in that book. I was asked one time, I don't suggest for you all to do this, but I did this one time talking to one of the officials. I've read the Communist Manifesto when I was a kid. I said, yeah, I have the book. I read the Communist Manifesto. Just because I read it doesn't mean I believe in every single thing in that book or I believe in the majority of it. I read it for research. It's none of their business what book you have for research. Okay? But also understand this. If you fly back into the country and you have certain books, even though it's legal to bring the books into the country, your name may be put on a list of questionable people. I'll give you an example. I know of a brother who was later paid a visit because he was questioned because he came into the country and he had a book by Sayyid Qutb. Sayyid Qutb is on the list of people who they consider suspicious because the American government believes that Al-Qaeda that they believe the ideological grandfather to Al-Qaeda is Al-Ikhwan al-Muslimun and Sayyid Qutb. Sayyid Hassan al-Banna. Hassan al-Banna, Sayyid Qutb. And if you're from the subcontinent, is if you have a book maybe by Sayyid Abu al-Ala Maududi, Jamaat al-Islami, or a book by Dr. Isra Ahmed, Jamaat al-Tanzeem, then you're considered maybe a little suspect. So anyway, that you just need to understand that. Not that you would have any of those books or bring any of those books back, but just understand that's just the reality of how things are right now, as certain authors are considered suspects. Similarly, we know of people who were visited just because they went on the YouTube, because under the Patriot Act allows the government to monitor what books are checked out of the library to what websites we go on. So some people in Dearborn were questioned. They had the FBI come to their homes and question them because they went on YouTube and they watched lectures of Brother Anwar al-Alaqi. You know, because he had the stories about Qasas al-Anbiya and the Sirah of Abu Bakr wa Umar radiallahu anhuma and these types of things. So they were questioned about that. So just understand that. Again, know your right. Know your legal right. Now, let me mention something about responsibilities. We at CARE, and this just isn't from our own ijtihad, for the purposes of maslaha, based upon our own reasoning, but we've talked with scholars about this, and we're very comfortable in encouraging American Muslims who are citizens to register to vote, and to contact your elected officials. And I know there's some brothers in the community who say, well, we shouldn't get involved in electoral politics, and this is the land of the disbelievers, and politics is dirty. I know a lot of brothers have this opinion. First of all, in American history and the history of humanity, if you don't stand up for your rights will be taken away from you. This is the first thing. We can see this in the Islamic history of the righteous khulafa, of how the rights were for the Muslimin under the righteous khulafa. And then look at how the rights of the Muslims became only shortly later after in the khilafah of Muawiyah ibn Yazid, or in the Abbasiyin, where we had our imams, like Imam Malik, who was beaten by the first Abbasi khalifa, of how Ash-Shafi'i, rahimahullah, had life threatened by a political authority. How Imam Ahmed bin Hanbal, rahimahullah ta'ala, was put in prison by Al-Mahmun. This is Islamic history, right? This happened to the Imams of Fiqh. Most of the four Imams faced hardships by the political authority, and their students faced problems. So if we don't stand up for our rights will slowly erode. So we have to stand up for our rights. This is why I believe it's important for us to be engaged in the political process. Now, I know some people say, voting for the president, what difference does it make voting for the president because Obama endorses gay marriage, or this one is this way, and they bomb the land of the Muslims and invade? Let me suggest to you that the important part of us being in politics is not even at the presidential level, it's at the local level. There's a famous American politician named Tip O'Neill that said all politics is local. It's most important for you as a community who's on your city council on the zoning board, because in many of our cities and across the country, the people who have given resistance to the building of new masajid and Islamic schools is at the local level. in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Right now, the Syrian brothers and sisters are facing problems in Farmington Hills, trying to open up a new center. They're getting problems from the zoning board. It's in your interest to vote for people on the zoning board or the city council or the school board who have a better relationship with the community over someone who has a bad relationship to the community. Someone who has values. Voting for your school board helps influence what's being taught in the schools, even the books. They're in the school and in the libraries. So we should know who these people are and engage them. And maybe one day have a Muslim run in that area, even though this is a non-Muslim land. Where is the example of this? I actually heard Sheikh Hamza Yusuf just invoke this recently, and I know different people have different opinions about him. But he was talking about Nabi Yusuf alayhi salam. He was in the land of people of Ahl al-Shirk, in Misr. When the government authority came and asked for his advice, he gave him his sincere advice, and he ended up being made the minister of agriculture in the land, but it was a majority land of people who were not believers in Allah Azza wa Jalla. They didn't believe in his nubuwwah, but he took on that responsibility for the betterment of the society. Simply, also, in being involved in the political process, we have the responsibility, no matter where we are at, if al-amru bil ma'ruf wa nahyi anil munkar. Kuntum khayra ummatin ukhrijat lin-nasi ta'muru bil ma'ruf wa tanhauna 'anil munkar wa tu'minuna billah. We are for all people. Kuntum khayra ummatin ukhrijat lin-nas. Not just for the Muslims. Ukhrijat lin-nas. So Nabi Musa alayhi salam, he spoke to Fir'aun. And he let Fir'aun know about the injustices that were going on. So when we see our government and our politicians doing things that could be spreading munkar, that could be spreading dhulm, we have the moral responsibility to write them or contact them or see them and say, we disagree with this. We disagree with your position on same-sex marriage. We disagree with your position to cut funding for education, because we know you can't have a thriving education when the people are jahileen. Or we're against, we're pleased, or we support the elected officials, such as Congressman Conyers, for instance, who are against the usage of American drones in Pakistan, who kill so many innocent civilians. Afghanistan, who kill our brothers, Somalia, Yemen. So we have a moral responsibility to engage the politicians in the political process for al-amru bil ma'ruf wa nahy an munkar. Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam said, when you see a munkar, we're supposed to change it, what? Biyadi. If we can't change it, biyadi, then we resist it, bilisani. We speak out against it. If we can't speak out against it, he said, feel about it, feel bad about it in your heart. وَذَلِكَ أَضْعَفُ الْإِيمَانِ. But that's the weakest form of faith. That's weak just to say, oh, it's bad and I feel bad, and you don't even say anything about it, especially when it's affecting the Muslims, and you just keep it inside. No, we make dua, and then we also try to speak out against it publicly. This is the minhaj of the Sahaba, radiallahu anhum ajma'een. Is what they did. Well, that's my brief informational talk for you, brothers. I appreciate your time. If you have any questions for me, you can ask. If you don't have any right now, you can contact our office. We have a website, caremichigan.org, C-A-I-R, michigan.org. Go on our website and you can call. Call our office number at any time. And we can do our best to assist you, and if we cannot assist you with your particular problem, inshallah, at least we can point you in the right direction to get some assistance for your issue, be it a immigration green card issue or whatever type of issue you may have. With that, I end my talk. Aqulu qawli hadha, astaghfirullah li wa lakum. Yes. Any Any question?
When you are coming and entering inside the United States, they have a right to ask you what type of job you do?
Yes, they do. They have a right to ask you that, like, yeah, what do you do for your employment? Who do you visit? How much money are you bringing back into the country? What did you buy over there? What are you bringing back to the country? They have the right to that. Yeah, did you go for business or for pleasure? Oh, you went for pleasure, who did you go visit? They can ask you that. When they start getting out specific questions about religion, then that's when you stop. So, you met with that sheikh, what does that sheikh believe? Now that's when it stops. That's when it stops.
If you force you to give the answer for this question, what you have to do?
They can't force you. What you say is, excuse me, but I respectfully decline to answer that question, and as I understand it, you don't have the right to ask me specific questions about my faith and my faith practices. You don't have that right. That's my constitutional right. You don't have the right to ask me about that. Be confident. They'll back down when you say that. Inshallah. You're welcome. Yes. Yeah, they can ask you that. Come back to the country, they can ask you that. And see, the funny thing about that is that one thing is that when you talk to law enforcement, always be truthful. That's part of our deen anyway, always be truthful. Because if they hold you, if they detain you for a while and ask you that question, believe me when I tell you, they already know the answer to that question. Because when they got your name and your passport number, they can look up in the computer, they can see. Right? So answer the question truthfully, because then if you don't answer it truthfully, then you're in trouble. But most of the questions, even the FBI, when they come to people's homes a lot of times, they already know the answers to their questions. They already know. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Of course. Yes.
When I went to Pakistan, he was a green card holder.
Uh-huh.
And of course, the green card, he didn't have a beard. You know, the picture was without the beard. He came back, he had a beard.
Uh-huh.
They stopped him, you know, that's challenging, you know, that's not your picture. You know, it's without a beard, and you have to give us the proof that it's, you know, it's your green card, and you have a picture.
Wallahi, I've never heard that before. I don't know. I've never heard that before. I mean, but a person can lose a lot of weight and look different in one picture to another, and then they can challenge it, and they can hold a person in question. They can hold a person in question about a number of personal things to verify if that person is who they are. I have never heard that before. But if he's grown a beard, I suggest you tell your friend that he goes. If he's planning on keeping his beard, inshallah, he doesn't shave his beard just because of that, he should go and take another picture. Yeah. And we have to understand, too, that as we're Muslims, okay, everything isn't fair in America. There's the written law, which is theoretical, and then there's the practical application of the law. Okay, we even have this in fiqh, right? We have theoretical laws in the Sharia, and then we have practical application. It can change, right? So, for instance, I was pulled for secondary screening because I was wearing a thobe, right? So they looked at me. I know they made a little signal. They pulled me over to the side, right? When I fly, if I'm wearing like a suit, wearing a thobe, every time I wore a thobe, I got pulled to the side. Right? So now when I fly, I don't wear a thobe. I wear slacks and a shirt. It's practically speaking, because I know I have the legal right to wear a thobe and kufi, right? But I know if I fly like that, even some of our shiuch, they who normally wear a thobe all the time, when they fly, they put on a shirt and some slacks because they know that it's going to increase their chances of getting pulled. So for the harassment, so yeah, do you have the legal right? Sure, but that's theoretically. Practically, when you get profiled, you'll be much more likely to get profiled if you're like dressed that way. It's unfortunate. Yes. Legally, up to 48 hours. The longest one I know is of a brother who was held for 13 hours. Yes. When you re-enter the country, this was challenged in court and it was upheld. The federal court says that the government has the right to check your laptop and even your cell phone. They can look through your cell phone. They can ask you if you have a security code. They can ask you, okay, unlock your security code, enter your security code, we want to look through your phone. So I'm glad you asked that. Jazakallahu khairan, because I forgot. When you're traveling overseas, like last three times I've traveled overseas, I didn't take my laptop. But if you do, either you have a separate laptop for travel, or if you have any like pictures with your family, you want to delete them, because like they can open up your laptop, they can see your wife without hijab on, and you know your daughter hijab. They can look at your personal like family photos and things like that. So you don't want them if your wife is muhajaba, you don't want these men looking at like pictures of your wife and your mother and daughter. So you take those pictures off of your laptop or off your phone, because they can look at them. And they can download your information too. Like everything on your laptop, on your hard drive, they can copy it and take it off. And your phone, take all your numbers. Yes, pardon me? Yeah, they can do it legally. Yes, they can. Just when re-entering the country. If you're here in the country already, they can't do it without a search warrant. Yeah, they can. Another thing is federal law enforcement. Don't let them in your house unless they have a search warrant. You can ask for it, ask to see it, and ask them to produce their identification. But you don't have to let them in your house. Once you let them in your house, it's over with. Then they get comfortable, it's over with, right? Uh-huh. Of course. Jazakallah khair.
They looked at me and said, probably I'm leaving, so they didn't ask me where are you going? And then they didn't ask me, they just showed up and you're acting from that side. So, yeah, I mean, right now I'm leaving, but I can call you back and give me a number and I'm going to chat with you somewhere. Okay, they gave me a card.
Next time they contact you again, tell them that I advise you that you tell them I will contact you back through my attorney. Then your attorney can ask them, well, what is the nature of the questions that you want to ask? A lot of times, these are what are called fishing expeditions. You know what a fishing expedition is? You know what a fishing expedition is, everyone? A fishing expedition, okay, let's say a fishing expedition, there's a big boat out in the sea. And what they do is, let's say they want to catch tuna. But when they throw the big net out, they might catch a little bit of tuna, but they'll catch everything. They'll catch seaweed, they might catch some clams and some crabs, they might collect some rubbish or some garbage from the sea. The net picks up everything. So this is what these fishing expeditions are. They go and make as contact as many people as they can, hoping that they can find something they're looking for. Okay? So a lot of times it's not even what they're looking for. 9 times out of 10, questioning people, they don't have any credible information. They're hoping to catch something. And primarily it's brothers. It's three reasons why they approach people. One is because of your travel or your communications overseas. And it says certain places, certain countries, right? Pakistan is one of those places. I mean, there's a number of countries. Syria, Palestine, Somalia, Afghanistan. There's a number of these countries on the hot list. Iran, Yemen, Lebanon. That's one thing. Or if you make frequent calls back there. The other thing is, if you go on to certain websites or go on to conferences and they got a hold of your name, if you associate it with certain organizations or certain people, right? So then they say, this person went to the ICNA Mass Conference, you know, because the government believes that Mass, the government, there are people who say that Mass is the American arm of the Ikhwan. So our government doesn't like the Ikhwan. Even though Ikhwan is not designated terrorist organization, the FBI considers Al-Ikhwan al-Muslimun to be an extremist organization. So if you go there, then maybe they might contact you. Go to ICNA Mass Conference, for instance. Are you speaking about law enforcement or general Americans? Oh, well, if you're re-entering a country, tell them it's none of your business. That's what you tell them. It's none of your business. That's all you tell them. It's none of his business, whether you have a beard or not. It's none of his business. Yes. Everything can be searched when you're coming back into the country. Your bags, your computer, your cell phone, down to your wallet. Everything can be searched. That's why when I fly out of the country and come back, like I said, I don't take my laptop.
Question about responsibility.
Yes.
If I see some activity which looks like illegal, like say terrorists, somebody's doing something, what is my responsibility?
I believe that your responsibility as an American citizen and as a Muslim, that if you see anyone committing any crimes or actively talking about committing a crime, that you should contact the law enforcement authorities. That's what we should do, because we're against criminality, no matter who it is. I don't care if it's someone who's selling drugs or if it's someone who's planning violence. We have a moral responsibility to contact the law enforcement, be it a Muslim or not a Muslim. One of the problems in Dearborn, people in Dearborn right now, this isn't about extremism regarding violence. There's a lot of drug activity going on in Dearborn, whether you realize it or not. A lot of Muslim youth are using drugs. There are people who even know who are selling the drugs, who are involved in the drugs, but they don't want to contact the police department or authorities to say, oh, well, we don't want to get the Muslim brother in trouble with law enforcement. Well, if you didn't talk to him, what do you mean? He's selling poison that is poisoning the Shabab al-Muslimin. He's poisoning Muslim youth, and then you say you don't want to call the police on him. He needs to be in jail. He's a criminal. That's my belief. It's a big problem in Dearborn. Have you all heard this drug called K2?
Yes.
You know what? You know about K2? Yeah. It's been sold in the gas stations. It's like a synthetic type of drug that's been sold in the gas stations, and youth smoke it. I just heard a complaint. There's nothing we could do about it, but a Muslima, Yemenia, was pulled for her second time for driving under the influence, and she had been smoking this stuff, and she couldn't pass. You know, when the police find someone who's high or drunk, they make them walk a straight line and go like this. She couldn't pass it. She's divorced from her husband. The judge sent her to 6 months in jail, and the state took her children. She just went to jail on Friday. And the government took her children because she's stuff called K2. It's called spice or incense. It's been sold, and the Muslim brothers, she bought it from the gas station owned by the Muslim brother. You see what I'm saying? There's another thing called bath salts. It's another one of these drugs. You need to understand, because your kids might be talking about this stuff. You don't know what it means. They say bath salts. This is a street name for a drug that's been sold legally in stores. It's like a little powder, and the kids use it. This drug has made people flip out. There was a guy recently in Florida. There was a homeless guy sleeping. The guy took the drug, and he went to the homeless guy and started chewing on his face. You didn't hear about this? Did you hear about the guy who smoked the K2, this other drug I told you about a couple of weeks ago in Waco, Texas? He smoked the stuff, and it made him believe that he was a dog. So he had a dog as a pet. So he attacked his dog and killed his dog and ate his dog. You heard about this, right, brother? Yeah. He ate his dog.
Why they sell these?
Huh?
Why they're selling?
They sell like in gas stations.
Why they won't allow them to sell?
The federal government hasn't made it illegal yet. It's like it's been sold, and now it's being talked about more, but it's a process where the federal government has to go through the Congress and they make it a controlled substance. It's a process. But it'll be made illegal soon. But the point is that I'm saying is that we have Muslims selling this stuff. And then Muslim youth smoke it. I mean, God forbid. You know, I mean, just imagine, you know, if you heard about your son trying to eat someone at school. Well, they haven't legally stopped. Well, see, what some of our brothers are doing, just like what they did before with the drug paraphernalia, I've seen it. They had it, like, on the front of, like, the window so you could, like, point it out. Now what they do is they still have it. They just have it underneath the counter. So when people go ask for it, they just pull it from the counter and sell it. Huh? May Allah help the Muslims. Yes. We contact CARE. You contact CARE's office. If it's for FBI questioning the law enforcement, we have a staff attorney. And you don't have to pay any fee just to come into CARE's office. That's what your generous donations, inshallah, help cover her salary. You give your sadaqah to CARE. So we have if it's criminal matters, we don't handle criminal cases. So if someone gets charged with something, then we don't have the attorney for that, but we can refer you to the proper attorney. Inshallah. Yes. Correct. Correct. That's good. سبحانك اللهم وبحمدك نشهد أن لا إله إلا أنت نستغفرك ونتوب إليك بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم والعصر إن الإنسان لفي خسر إلا الذين آمنوا وعملوا الصالحات وتواصوا بالحق وتواصوا بالصبر